Thank you for having me be a part of your symposia today. When I was asked to be a part of this discussion and to start the session off with talking about statistical considerations in on-farm research, one of the first questions Drew asked me was, what kind of on-farm research do you do in ARS? And so, well, no, in ARS, as a rule, we don't have a lot of on-farm research. The themes, the concerns, the considerations of research study cut across all topics of science. And so I think the presentation that myself and my co-author have been able to put together for you today, I hope that you'll be able to take some of this information with you and take it back to your own projects. So I did a little bit of research myself as I was prepping for today's talk, and did a little online research to see what is out there on on-farm research as a topic. And the themes that we see, that I see in print anyway, is that the purpose of on-farm research is that we want practical use. Commonly, right, we want to use plots that are field scale with standard farm machinery. I see that a lot in the literature. And also, we want to be able to conduct comparisons. And there's a lot of effort and expense that goes into doing on-farm research. And so the concern with conducting those comparisons is to ask the question, is that comparison valid? So I have a couple other comments here that I put in quotes because I took them directly from the website. And I see this phrase a lot in all of science, this phrasing here, statistically valid designs should be used. Statistically valid designs is a really loaded statement. I hear some commentary out there. And following that up, and we do statistically valid designs so that the results of the comparison are not misleading. Okay, statistically valid design is pretty loaded, and I said that because, you know, do we ever really think what it means to have a statistically valid design? And so that's where the theme of my talk is going, and I hope by the end of the conversation today, you'll have a really good idea what it really means to have this statistically valid design in quotes. And also, we do this because we want, this is a quote, field variation and other factors will not discredit the reliability of the results. I want you to think about that as I'm going through today and think, you know, that's a really common concern I hear about in all facets of science. And I want you to think about, really, is it really a concern to have field variation and other factors? Or isn't this a part of the research process? And maybe we want to see what that's causing and be able to model that and look at that. So this is okay. So statistically valid designs, we usually do this because we want to make conclusive statements regarding the pattern or causation based on the evidence, and we do this in form of a statistic, and our favorite statistic is usually the p-value, right? We want to be able to make inference and a statement, and we base it off of this p-value statistic, and we use observations, the data, which was collected from a random sample from the population of interest. But I want you to think about that p-value and making that conclusive statement, and think about how confident are you really in that? What is the inference you're trying to make? Because all of this directly relates to the research priority and the goal of the research. So in defining research priorities, most commonly what I see in the on-farm research literature, I look at it as two categories. We can understand a process, and so I have some examples here of looking at the impact of tillage practice on residue, or doing a variety comparison, or looking at the process of a particular cropping system. Or another category would be to establish actual principles like weed and pest control guidelines, fertilization rate, and cover crop use guidelines. Okay, so let's think about this process of the research cycle. And it is a cycle. And we We'll start usually, you know, with this, the idea of asking the research question, stating an objective. We need to have that so we can actually collect data to answer that objective or question. And then we do an analysis off of that data we've collected, and that analysis directly relates to what our design is and what question we've asked. And then we start the process all over again, and it keeps continually going. It is truly a cycle. And each component of this cycle is part of what makes up a statistically valid design. So in the research planning phase, when I am contacted to consult on a project, these are the first two questions out of my mouth. What is your question? What is your goal? And maybe along with that, I'll say, is this hypothesis-driven research? Is this non-hypothesis-driven research? And those are important concept to grasp, to get a hold of where are you really starting from. And so when we're talking about non-hypothesis-driven research, discovery-driven research, usually I phrase that in the term of a goal. And so when I'm thinking about applied on-farm research, what I see a lot in the literature, you want to apply the results of the study to a larger landscape beyond the local conditions of an experimental site. A more specific hypothesis might question, does new variety X have greater disease resistance than standard variety Y? This being this hypothesis you can really set into a truly controlled study and test the situation. So I've thrown the term inference in there a couple times just to be clear what inference space is, what I'm talking about. It's the region of the population that has actually been investigated and can be characterized by a statistical model. So how does inference space and population sample, how do these work together in your research process? You really need a clear definition and identification about the population of which you need to make inference about. So ask yourself two questions. Do the experimental materials available represent the defined population of inferential interest? Do the sites and locations of the experiment represent the population of inferential interest? In other words, are you doing probabilistic sampling, random sampling, or are you doing convenience sampling? And when convenience sampling is bad, is when the answer to these two questions is no, right? You don't want the answer to these questions to be no. So maybe a little review for a lot of us, but just to bring us all up on where I'm taking us in this discussion today, I just wanted to review some design fundamentals. Remember those basics maybe you learned in Stat 101, the three R's they are commonly referred to. The first being replication. We replicate because we want to have a valid estimation of an error variance. Reduction of variation among plots. We want to control or reduce the error variance, and we use blocking here. This is why we use blocking, to control the heterogeneity present in an experiment. And remember, we want to block at the scale of variability. And then randomization. We randomize so that we can have unbiased estimates of means and variances. Okay, so replication. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. This is replication. It's the number of times an experiment is conducted under a given set of conditions on a randomly sampled experimental unit. And your experimental unit can be anything from the range of a pot, a plot, an animal, a field, a soil type, or even a farm. The trouble happens sometimes with replication when we move on to analysis, and instead of using the true replication, we accidentally, or maybe intentionally, use the subsampling error instead of our true replication. And subsampling would be, you know, let's say on the farm, you've taken multiple measurements of your response, but your farm is your true experimental unit. That's your true experimental unit, not the 20 or 100 samples that you took on the farm at that same time. And pseudo-replication occurs. We run into this a lot, and we don't even recognize it. This is not true replication because On the observational unit, on the experimental unit, you know, we might have repeated measures of that sample, and we treat them as independent in the ensuing analyses when in fact they are interdependent. We also utilize multiple years, multiple locations. These are really great items to use to increase and expand our inference space, so we can get an idea of the different conditions that are out there for our inference space. But this key here, and I think it's really key for those doing on-farm research, the idea of maintaining that data integrity. I know this can be difficult when you're dealing with lots of different cooperators that you are relying on following your protocol. So this is really key, the idea of standardizing the protocol for those sampling methods and variable measurements. And we'll get into a little bit more about how to deal with that process. So in true replication and randomization, I thought I'd start out just by showing it in the simplest example that we have in our sciences, really. And that would be in a paired plots and blocks type format, where here I've got one treatment, two levels of A and B. The colors represent the block, which is the unit of the replication. And I have randomized my levels within each block, so B and A, B and A, A and B. The analysis of this design, where each pair is a block, block is a source of variability, so it is a random effect. Treatments are fixed effects, and we're interested in probably a mean parameter estimation here. In two levels of replication, we can commonly run into that with a split plot, where we have two separate but nested treatment structures. And the treatment level here, in my very simple example, is of the whole plot. I have two different colors, like a blue and kind of an orange, and those are randomized amongst all possible blocks for our whole plot. And then the treatment level of the subplot, letters A and B within each whole plot, are randomized as well. So here, also the analysis is to ensure, you want to make sure, of course, that the whole plot error is going to be our block by whole plot. But our subplot error and our interaction error are going to be served by the residual. Two simple designs that I think we are very familiar with in controlled studies. So, if you noticed, of course, in the previous two slides, that in these type of controlled, randomized, replicated studies, that the statistical model always follows the experimental design in a randomized, replicated experiment. And these are very typical, straightforward designs and utilized to answer a specific testable hypothesis question. So I want to switch gears a little bit here. And I have the title of the slide as Unreplicated Field Plots, because I get asked a lot about doing unreplicated work, and it can be very cool to do it as long as it all fits in with your research process. So when your research goal is focused on development, so think in development terms, maybe you're saying, okay, I just want to see, I want to find something better, and I'm approaching this from a screening method application. So the goal is not to make a causal inference, but we want to identify good performers. And perhaps once we identify those good performers, we want to ask further research questions on it. This is where we are in this process. So this design is really applicable to small demonstration plots, like maybe a yield trial or variety testing process, i.e. an assessment of new varieties against the standard. So the implementation of this, you'll commonly see this referred to in the literature as augmented designs. And it's really an easy three-step process, one to select any experimental design for the checks, enlarge the blocks, or increase the number of rows to accommodate the new varieties, and then the new varieties are randomly distributed. Let me show you this in a couple of graphics. So here's a basic, typical RCB, and let's just pretend it's yield test plots. I have four blocks, and I have my four treatments or four new varieties randomized within each block. I augment the RCB with my new varieties, and here in this slide I only have room for 1 to 24 new varieties, but these can get very large. We're talking hundred. You can test hundreds if that's what your needs are. But you'll notice what's going on here is that each variety is occurring only one time and that they are randomly distributed throughout the whole RCB. So, advantages of the augmented design is that more than one check can be included. So if you're interested in comparing back to several standards that are used perhaps in the, you know, the geographic area of interest, for example, you can utilize those. And they should be replicated. In fact, they need to be replicated because the replication of the standards is what's used for your estimation of experimental error. And this is a very efficient type of design, not only in terms of doing the field setup, but also in the analysis. It has a very efficient aspect to it, and probably will save you time as well without all the added replication. And also less physical space is needed. And the key here is that with the appropriate question and desired inference-based criteria met, this is a really valid design option, statistically valid design, for the appropriate research question. But the focus here at the end of the analysis is that you're not going to be doing multiple comparisons to get your favorite p-value. Instead, what you're utilizing here is this estimate of experimental error from our replicated checks to assess the variability and estimate a response of what the new varieties behold to you. And then, as I stated in the earlier slide, perhaps the goal then is to take the top few and further do a controlled study on those, or maybe it is just to release that information out to the grower and say, look, here's the amount of variability, of course, speaking to it in the terms that is important to them, if it's yield or disease incidence, and going forward with that. If you're interested in the topic of of augmented designs, some great tools to get started are some articles by Walt Federer. Also, Bugueno and Crosa have a really nice website as part of the CIMIT organization, and they're very helpful if you have questions about using their macro, if that's something you're interested in. So I also now want to switch gears to another type of very useful application, and something that I think on-farm research sees a lot of, and this would be the use of a large-scale whole field type of application. This might be where the research question involves the evaluation of a management practice. So, for example, maybe the comparison of tillage systems, residue management, crop rotations, soil amendments, etc., for a best management practice. And I'm talking about whole fields, so I'm meaning one field or one farm is equal to one replicate, which is one experimental run. Again, still a valid design option, but spatial heterogeneity is likely and should not be ignored. Instead, it should be modeled. But how? There are many, many appropriate analysis methods available, and I'm going to touch base on a few of those in the next few slides. So, a couple definitions that I want us all to be on top of when talking about this type of modeling falls under a general umbrella of multi-level modeling. And basically, we have nested data. And we can have nested data in terms of hierarchical or longitudinal. Within a hierarchical data structure, we're going to have at least two levels of sampling. And nesting might also occur even when not an explicit part of the study design. An unintentional nesting might occur. So let me get into a little more detail on that. So here in a very simple example, I have a hierarchical data structure. At the very top, I have my population. And I'm going to hopefully randomly sample from my population. And I've identified here in this level, I have two soil types. And soil type 1 might come from farm 1, and soil type 2 might be at farm 2. I might have 30 other soil types. I might have 50 other farms. But this is just a very simple example for the purposes of the slide. Within soil type 1, I happen to have applied a particular soil amendment. And I also happen to have a particular residue management scheme that's on that field. In soil type 2, I also have a soil amendment, but I don't have a residue management scheme. I may or may not even have the same soil amendment that's being applied on soil type 2, on soil type 1. So what's going on here? Soil amendment here is nested within soil type 2, and this soil amendment and this residue management scheme are nested within soil type 1. I have a hierarchy. Along with this, I have dependence. This occurs when we have many observations coming from the same unit level, producing dependence in the response data. And remember a couple slides ago, I said this could be unintentional as well. And remember a few slides before that, I was talking about maintaining data integrity, standardizing your protocols. This is where it can all come together and end up with dependence and nesting. And this can happen when we interpret protocols a little bit differently at each location, or maybe something happens, an unintended consequence happens at each location. This is where it kind of all merges together. And so you need to recognize that and have good open communication and dialogue, I think, with all parties so that it's clear what happened at a given location. But yet, don't be afraid when it happens. There are many ways to deal with these unintended consequences. But also we can have repeated measures collected on the same unit. This is also a form of dependency. And think of it in these terms, maybe at each one of my locations, they go out and collect these repeated measures over the time period of the growing season. The pattern or rate of change at each location is going to be dependent on within that given location. So something to keep in mind then, ANOVA and ordinary least squares regression assume independence, right? So now, but I've just told you this whole study design, there's a lot of dependence in my data. So what happens when we violate independence if we were to try and fit that data structure, that hierarchical data structure, into an ANOVA or ordinary least square regression is that we would probably see F statistics that would be too large, i.e. we're going to overestimate the significance of the model. Our error estimates would tend to be too small. We are overestimating the significance of specific comparisons. And basically, ignoring the hierarchical structure of data severely limits the ability to model the within and between group effects. So how are we going to do that? Well, there's a whole host of options out there. And multi-level models is a very general term. And there's a lot of modeling applications out there that will take into account that dependence due to the nested data structure, that variability that is there inherently within the data. And here's just a really kind of brief list as well of all the models that are out there, everything from variance components models, multi-level models, random coefficients models, random effects models, mixed models, general mixed models, hierarchical linear models, and the list goes on, variations on the theme. So how are we going to maybe build a multi-level model when it comes to this very simple example that I had on the slide here with our two different soil types and our amendments and management in the unit level beneath them? So in simplest terms, I would start with by saying my soil type is not a fixed effect. Remember, this is a random sample from all possible samples within my population, is to be representative of my whole population. These effects are not estimated individually then for each soil. Instead, we want to assume a particular distribution, and i.e. in the modeling, when we get into modeling in the random effects phase, we would refer to the intercept here. And we're doing this across the population of all soil types. Oh, okay. The second level, we have the soil amendment and the residue management. That depends on the question asked to determine if that needs to be a fixed or random effect in the model. So I'll just leave it at that for now. And in a recent application that was actually talked about in Monday's biometry session, and he did record the symposia talk, if this is a topic that you're interested in, I really encourage you after the meeting to go back and listen to Kevin McCarter's talk. He really did a really nice study on accounting for spatial variability and developing variable rate treatment prescriptions for applications in precision agriculture. Okay, so today, briefly to wrap it up, my considerations that I want you to remember would be the development of your research question, very key in helping you lead to an appropriate design to experiment to answer the question. Remember, is it a probabilistic sample versus a convenient sample? How will sampling and design influence the inference that I want to make? In the analysis of your design, what are my fixed and random effects? And also, I briefly touched on the incorporation of an unreplicated screening experiment and the use of nested hierarchical and longitudinal data structures in multi-labeling modeling. And remember, these are all results to move forward as it is all part of the cycle of science, the cycle of our research process. Thank you. So the question is, in an augmented design, you have replicated standard checks, and the approach you've been doing is to calculate a standard error of the differences of the checks, and then applying a Tukey's correction.
Right, for a multiple comparison.
Okay, for a multiple comparison. Okay, I didn't go into the detail because I didn't really have a lot of room in the talk, but the model would involve the incorporation and calculation of blups. It should incorporate the calculation of blups, and if that's what you're doing, the best linear unbiased predictor calculation, that's what you should be focusing on and rank ordering at the end. I do not encourage, and it has not been encouraged, to try and calculate a Tukey's out of the blup, because blup is its random effects. And doing a Tukey's that's mean separation. Mean is a parameter estimate for a fixed effect. We should talk more. That's a brief answer.
Kathy, can we have a discussion after the next two talks? Kathy will stay here.
Definitely.
And one thing I need to have her tell me what a bluff is.
That's a whole nother talk for a whole nother day.